So can we go to the questions for Dr. Gendon's presentation, the pre-questions, please? Yeah, should be, again, two questions associated with his talk. Awesome. So a 57-year-old male presents with a 1.5 centimeter right-sided tonsil cancer and three right-sided metastatic lymph nodes in level 2 and 3. The nodes all measure less than 6 centimeter. Biopsy confirms that the carcinoma is HPV positive. There's no evidence of distant metastatic disease. And as many of you know, this is representing the changes that were made for the 8th edition of the AJCC that went into effect January 1st of this year. So the new the correct staging is T1N1, M0, stage 1, T1 N2 M0 stage 1, T1 N2B M0 stage 1, T2 N2 M0 stage 1, and Dr. Gendon gave you five choices because four wasn't hard enough. T2 N2 M0 stage 1. All right. So we have, Eric, help me out with this. Correct answer is?
N1.
So it's A, correct?
Yeah.
Good. So again, I think this underscores the changes that have occurred in the staging system and the fact that we now recognize what would have been staged originally as stage 4 disease as now being stage 1, and this is much more appropriate staging because of the HPV disease having a very good outcome in terms of treatment outcome for this population. So Eric's going to talk about that. And then let's go to the next question, please. 64-year-old woman presents with a left-sided left level 2 cystic neck mass measuring 3 centimeters, no other pertinent findings on physical exam or nasal endoscopy. Needle biopsy is performed demonstrating inadequate tissue. Second needle biopsy is performed that demonstrates epithelial cells, no evidence of malignancy. Which of the following is not an ideal management? Perform a third needle biopsy of the neck mass wall for cytology. Test the cystic contents for thyroglobulin. Because women have a significantly lower level of HPV negative associated oropharyngeal cancer, you could observe the patient and schedule a follow-up in 12 weeks. Take the patient to the operating room, perform an open neck biopsy with a frozen section analysis. If the lymph node is confirmed squamous carcinoma, perform neck dissection, diagnostic laryngoscopies, and directed biopsies. Perform a thyroid ultrasound, schedule an operative excisional biopsy. None of the choices is ideal. So, answers? So again, we're going to go to the Oracle. Eric.
A woman in this age group, you probably wouldn't want to just watch for 12 weeks. You'd probably want to investigate a little further. And we'll talk a little bit about that and why that is, because the changing face of a neck mass is important.
Okay, very good. So with no further ado, Eric Gendon, who's chair at Mount Sinai. Eric's been really one of the leading edge individuals in the implementation of robotics, and then also has a strong basic science background that he also looks at the basic science of HPV disease. Again, thank you for being here today.
Thank you. So thank you, Dennis. Thank you for the college, for the opportunity.
Oh, great.
Top button.
To talk to you. Right. Okay. Okay, so we'll talk a little bit about HPV because it's, as you all know, a significant part of all of our practices. If you're seeing head and neck masses, I don't have any financial relationships. Over the past 3 decades, the incidence of oral cavity, laryngeal, and hypopharyngeal carcinoma is declining in the United States. However, oropharyngeal carcinoma has been on the rise, and this is predominantly among men actually in the age group of the people sitting in this room today, most of us. It's attributable to HPV infection. I think that while most of us have been in practice for a while, we've done some recent wide local questionnaire among not only medical students, residents, but also physicians to find that there is a significant knowledge gap as it relates to HPV-associated disease. And so we're going to go through some basics because I think it's important to get firm groundwork. For those of you who know or don't know, HPV is a group of 200 different viruses that can be spread through sexual contact. A minority of people, this leads to cervical malignancy. It's the only known cause of cervical cancer in women. This is a very stable virus. It can exist on a floor in the right conditions for a month, hence people developing plantar warts. 60 types, roughly, are cutaneous. 40 are mucosal. The cutaneous types are responsible for the warts, the cutaneous warts on a hand. The mucosal type break into, and this is a little simplistic, but 6 and 11 can cause cervical dysplasia, genital warts, respiratory papillomatosis. The high-risk types 16 and 18 are the ones that lead to cervical cancer and oropharyngeal cancer. The reality is it's not just 16 and 18, 33, 35, and a whole host of others have been reported. But they simply break out into high-risk and low-risk, and it's important to know. I think that, you know, it's important to understand that the virus is easily transmissible. And it does one of two things. It either exists in an integrated form in the DNA or in the episomal form. And I'm not going to get into the implications of this. But what is important is that once in the cell, you basically create a situation where apoptosis is disturbed, and so you have cellular immortality. The P16 staining, and we'll talk a little bit about that, which is commonly used as a surrogate for HPV, is not definitive. What's definitive in the eyes of most people is PCR. PCR picks up the fact that there's a causal relationship of the virus and the tumor. You can have, for example, skull-based tumors, nasopharyngeal cancers, non-squamous cancers that are P16 positive, but HPV negative. So when we ever get a biopsy back, we're looking at, you know, whether or not this is an HPV-induced tumor. P16 is the first step, but the second and important step is likely going to be PCR to prove causation, and we'll talk a little bit about that. Chattaveri and Moore-Gillison, both demonstrating interesting data, the drop and decline in cervical carcinoma in women as a result of HPV, but a directly opposite meteoric rise in HPV-associated oropharyngeal cancer, and in particular, this is in men. We do see it in women, but it is largely in men. And recently, the rate of oropharyngeal HPV malignancy has surpassed the prevalence of cervical cancer in women. So that gives you an idea how significant this issue is, and based on most of the epidemiologic studies, this is kind of just the beginning. So this will be part of your practice. There's been a dramatic shift from HPV negative to HPV positive disease, and most of us in the room, not everybody, but most of us in the room, actually probably everybody, were trained during the HPV negative era. This is a different situation. There has been a shift in the way that these patients present clinically, how we manage them, and what their outcomes are. And understanding this is critical to dealing with the neck mass. In HPV negative disease, which is what most of us kind of were raised seeing, these are tobacco and alcohol users, usually. They're a little older in the sixth and seventh decade. They complain of pain. These are epithelial surface lesions. You can see them. They're not well defined. They're painful. They're ulcerative. And while many patients will present with a neck mass, some of the larger studies only demonstrate that somewhere in the 50% range. So you may have metastatic disease, but typically the first diagnosis is made by the pain of odynophagia. That's a little different than in HPV-positive disease. Many of these patients have no severe, you know, significant tobacco use. Many of them may have smoked in the distant past. Usually it's less than 10 pack years. They are younger patients. We see patients in their 30s. We've had them in their 20s, fifth and sixth decade. Interestingly, we'll talk about this in a second, because the virus integrates into the reticulated epithelium at the base of the tonsil, it has access to the lymphatics, and so many of these patients will present with a neck mass. Much more commonly, they will present with a neck mass than do the HPV-negative patients, and they'll often complain not of pain, but of a foreign body sensation, right? You can imagine, this does not hurt. This tonsil lesion, but it feels funny. And so they'll come in with this kind of sense that there's something in their throat. And so there are a number of good, well-written articles looking at the changing face of the presenting patient. They're younger, they're male, they're largely white, which is a very interesting concept. They will more commonly present with advanced nodal disease. And the likelihood of distant metastatic disease is much lower in these patients. And so when we talk about working up the neck mass in 2018, this has to be one of the top considerations in your practice. Patients with HPV-positive oropharyngeal cancer are more likely to present with smaller tumors in the throat. They may be in the base of tongue. They may be in the tonsil. These are the two areas that they tend to integrate, but they have typically more advanced nodal disease, larger nodes, 3, 4, 5 centimeters in some cases. Several studies report kind of the different presenting symptoms, and as I said, many of the studies demonstrate that these patients present with neck mass as their primary presentation. Direct visualization of the mass in the throat sometimes can be very challenging, and we'll talk a little bit about that. We see tumors, not uncommonly, that are 3-4 millimeters, very difficult to pick up, and sometimes you can't. They don't have otalgia, they don't have dysphagia. It's an interesting new group of patients. HPV-positive patients can present with cystic neck masses, and in fact, they not uncommonly do. And this can be a little bit of a challenge to the practitioner because you want to be thinking, yes, of course, of HPV metastasis, because that's what we're talking about, but don't forget papillary thyroid carcinoma. A common presenting sign is a cystic neck mass, but you have epithelial cysts. You know, you have things that are kind of red herrings, but not uncommon today, like actinomycosis. So you want to keep your broad thought about this. You do not want to fall in love with your diagnosis and walk out of here and say, I saw this talk on HPV. Every cystic neck mass is HPV. And so these cystic neck masses, as you see, look very different. There, you know, one may be necrotic lymph nodes with a cystic component. This looks like a true cyst. And when you take a look at these up close, you can imagine that putting a needle into this, we want to get a cyst wall. Here, it's going to be very difficult. Both of these are malignancies, but the way you may approach them are different. As Dr. Dreschel discussed, critically important to send off for thyroglobulin as part of the workup. I send out for, you know, culture, thyroglobulin, and obviously general cytology, and if indicated, not in these cases, flow cytometry. But you can see that they can present very differently, and these can sometimes be a challenge. When you do your fine needle aspiration, as you just heard, you can come up with many different types of findings. Typically, in the HPV-associated patient, you're going to get a biopsy that's keratin negative, it's basaloid, and they'll report it often as poorly differentiated. A poorly differentiation, this is actually a misnomer. It's not that it's poorly differentiated. Poorly differentiated in an HPV-negative tumor speaks to a whole other class of biologic behavior. But poorly differentiated, what they're seeing on those is the embryonic cells that are large, plump, and are often reported this way. But it doesn't determine clinical outcome. And so what you'll often see are these big kind of plump cells. This is P16 staining, important in helping you with the diagnosis. but not always the final say, which is why PCR is important. It's certainly important to mention, and I've purposely diverted a little bit here, the virus, and this is Bill Westra's work, who's now with us at Sinai. You know, the virus inspissates, it integrates into the reticulated epithelium deep within the tonsil. And so typically the virus will integrate deep within the tonsil, and then the carcinoma will begin in the 10% of people that can't suppress the virus and develop a persistent infection. You can see that the virus and the tumor burgeons outwards, right? That's different than HPV negative. So if you go to biopsy this tonsil with a typical diagnostic laryngoscopy and cut biopsy forceps, you may very well miss this. And that's why we had for so many years so many unknown primaries. They're not really unknown. They're down there. They're just deep down in the tonsil. And so it's really important to understand that. We see little teeny 1 or 2 millimeter deposits in the tonsil with no evidence of other disease in the tonsils. And this patient in the lower had N2C disease, nodes on both sides, and a 1 millimeter primary. So one of the things that we recommend is doing a lingual tonsillectomy, and what you're looking at is a patient in a tonsil position, uvulas here, they're upside down. This is the lingual tonsil at the base of tongue, and we're doing this robotically, but you don't need to do it robotically. And we're removing the lingual tonsil, and herein is, you know, herein is the patient with a 1 millimeter focus that we're able to identify. So the days of, you know, and this is up for discussion, but I would argue the days of taking a patient in, putting a laryngoscope in, doing our directed biopsies and calling it a day, in the world of HPV may not be the most accurate way to identify a primary. So why is it so important to identify a primary, particularly in this disease? You know, if you don't know your primary, first of all, these are younger patients, all right? And if they're going to be treated for an unknown primary, they're going to probably get around 7,000 centigrade to right neck, left neck, and total mucosal irradiation. That's a large volume. And in a 50-year-old patient, that's going to have significant implications down the road. Most of us know, you know, teeth scarring, the list goes on and on. We want to try to de-escalate therapy when appropriate in these patients. By identifying a tonsil primary, you can decrease the volume, but not necessarily decrease the dose. And if you can identify the primary and do surgical resection in the appropriate patient, you can either obviate the need for any radiotherapy or drop the dose down, and some of the new trials are in the 5,000 range, and localize the treatment. This is not the 78-year-old veteran that comes in that outlives the long-term effects of radiotherapy. This is the 52-year-old person who comes in who at 62 is going to have major functional deficits. So thinking about this is really important. Dr. Deschler alluded to this, critically important, I think, in particular in the world of HPV. When your FNA and your workup really doesn't yield a diagnosis, you've done your thyroglobulin, you've done the, you know, you're often left with doing an open neck biopsy. But if you're going to do that, as he, you know, stated, you really want to prep the patient for at very least a neck dissection, getting a frozen section, and moving forward. There are times we just, you know, we go into the operating room, we don't have a diagnosis. And so we want them prepped for a neck dissection because I don't want to contaminate the neck. If the patient, and depending on the situation, sometimes we'll even be prepared to do the transoral resection to either identify the primary or perform the complete resection. But I don't want to contaminate the neck. And if you get in there and the biopsy is anything but positive, I'd recommend you wake up patient up and wait for pathology because it's probably something a little odd. The two most common causes of these cystic neck masses in this adult population is going to be thyroid or HPV typically. And if you can't make a diagnosis on the frozen, you might be missing something here. And so it's worth waking up and taking a careful look. I'm not going through the staging. The question that we've submitted was really to make the point that the staging for HPV negative disease is quite elaborate, and it focuses on things like extranodal extension, and you can see the verbiage here. The staging system for HPV positive is much more simplistic, where essentially N1 disease is one or more ipsilateral nodes as long as they're less than 6 centimeters. And this speaks to the idea that the volume of disease in the neck doesn't directly correlate with the outcome. You can have 2 nodes, 3 nodes, 4 nodes, and you're still going to be an N1. The size of the nodes does, the bilaterality of it does, but you can have multiple nodes in one neck and remain an N1. The minute they cross over, you drop into a different survival group. So clinically involved nodes, whether it's one or many, as long as it's ipsilateral, they have a similar impact on survival. That's why they're N1. Survival, radiographically or otherwise, when they become bilateral or contralateral, is distinguishably worse than N1. Hence, it's N2. And that's really the take-home point here. And so all those patients that prior to this staging that were stage 3 and stage 4 disease, many of them are going to be stage 1 or stage 2 disease. And that speaks to the fact that these patients generally do very well, irrespective of the therapy instituted. Last, second to last slide. This is an often quoted paper and an often quoted graph demonstrating that in patients treated with oropharyngeal cancer, those that are HPV positive do quite well. Cure rates are in the 70, 80, 90% range, depending on what you read. The intermediate risk are those that are HPV positive and smoke. HPV negative patients, on the other hand, they don't do as well. It's a different disease. I would argue that we call them both squamous cell carcinoma, but it's a different clinical entity with a completely different outcome and a different presentation. So, a couple final thoughts. One, HPV-positive oropharyngeal cancer, it's an epidemic. And in our lifetime as surgeons, it's going to become a bigger part of our practice, whether you want it to be or not. And it looks like it's probably going to grow. It is a distinct disease. We call it squamous cell carcinoma, but make no mistake about it. It behaves differently. The outcomes are different, as I mentioned. And patients will commonly present with a neck mass. And that's the real take home here and the purpose of kind of, you know, why I'm talking about this. The oropharynx, oral cavity cancer patients that are smokers present with pain. They may or may not have a neck mass. These patients largely will present with a neck mass. And so it's a different presentation than we were trained with. And cystic neck masses in this group is common. And so you really got to, again, not fall in love with your diagnosis, but really think broadly about what this is. And treatment paradigms, as you'll see, have changed not only and are changing to accommodate the patients, but also accommodate their outcomes. And hence, that's why there's some terrific trials that are out there related to de-escalation of therapy in this young patient population. Thank you very much. Great.